Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Committee will come to order. This is the second meeting. And today we're going to have a lesson. Today we're going to have a lesson in Earth Science. And today we're going to have a test in several things. But we're going to begin learning. And our guest teacher today is Benjamin Friesen, from Earth Science teacher from Hopkins West Junior High School. And Mr. Friesen is the homeroom teacher of Maria Rood, Representative Rood's eighth grade son. And so we know he's qualified, and he's going to teach us something today. Mr. Friesen, welcome to the committee. These are people that haven't been in middle school for a long, long time, or there's a few that have just come out of middle school because they too were teachers. But I know that it's been many a year since I learned something in earth science, so I'm prepared to learn today. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Madam Chair and members. I just wanted to introduce myself again. I'm Ben Friesen, Earth Science teacher at Hopkins West Junior High. I'm going to have a real hard time sitting in this chair. I'm used to running around the room, so please forgive me if I get up. I'll try to speak really loud. I'm excited to be here today to share my passion for teaching and also how I use technology in the classroom. The two things I want to get across today and emphasize, I guess, more than anything, is how I use technology to engage students in my classroom and how that's an important step for differentiation and engaging learners. The other what I wanted to do is share how I use technology to, I guess, improve my own teaching and how it provides possibilities for immediate feedback and adaptation on the fly. And so those are the two things I'm going to go over. I'm going to mix a little bit of earth science as far as plate tectonics and volcanoes with some weather and related topics that you're going to be taking a test on, I understand, so that'll be very interesting. And I guess my delivery method here is I'm going to use my website to show how I use a website in class and how it allows for students to do work outside of class, and then it helps me organize the class content. I'd like to keep this a little bit relaxed or laid back. So if you have any questions, if it's appropriate, please feel free to ask those if the opportunity arises. I think one of the most important things with technology is that you have to use it every single day. And for example, I start my class every single day with either my website up or some other activity. And the students see that I use it, and I try to make it visually pleasing so it's a place they might want to go. They're used to visiting websites all over the place, whether it's, they're used to seeing smooth and clean interfaces, and so I want to make sure it's a place that looks like they might actually want to go. And so that's my starter. To get things going today, though, sometimes what I like to do is get the learning started right off the bat rather than having the students think that they're killing time while we look at volcanoes and earthquakes, but we're really learning. But I just thought I'd start with something that demonstrates the use of technology in the classroom. This is an image of Mount Etna, which is a volcano in Sicily, I believe, and there's a lot of information here. There's a on the left side of the screen, there's something that says displacement in centimeters, and this would be something, a topic where I would talk to the students, what does displacement mean? How much is a centimeter? There's a timeline along the bottom of the screen in months, and we'd be able to talk about what is the time scale involved. There's also a time scale or a bar on the right side of the screen that's called pressure, and we could talk about what are the units of pressure and what does pressure mean. Now, I apologize. I usually have a smart board in my room, and I'm able to write on the screen and use digital markers, and it's a really good way to focus on where you're looking. And so right now I'll just try to move the mouse around to show you what I'm actually looking at. So we're looking at pressure right here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to press play, and I want you guys to make some predictions. Make some observations about what's happening, and we'll go from there. Oops, sorry. Now with my students, what I'd do is I'd press play and we'd watch, and it'd be an engagement tool right off the bat. So I'd remind them again, we're looking at a volcano, what's changing? What do you see changing? You see colors, and then I'll stop it and I'll talk about what colors, what do you think those colors represent? And then someone would say displacement. This is a volcano, so I should maybe go into a little more detail. Like, the ground is actually moving, and we will talk about the ground has the potential to move. And if the ground is actually moving, what could happen? Oh, earthquakes! Great. What is more displacement, blue or red? And we could have these discussions, and there could be a couple of journal questions to go with it. And so now we're starting to see the whole ground move. And now I can start asking the students, almost 2 years have gone by, sensors have been gradually moving the ground, and the scientists are measuring that the ground is actually changing. What do you predict is going to happen next? Okay. And then I could be like, well, Mount Etna is on the cover of National Geographic like every other month. And why? And then we would go on, and we get to the last frame, and then we can say, well, what do you predict is going to happen? And we're talking about volcanoes, so eventually they're going to say, well, it's going to erupt, just like I heard you all say. So we interpreted real data. We looked at a real-world example. We analyzed it using real numbers, and we just did all sorts of higher level thinking, and we technically haven't even started class yet. Okay, maybe the students have actually done some writing and some journaling. And what makes all this possible is being able to use a computer and to be able to project these images and to have access to technology in the classroom. So it's a really powerful piece to make it real world and relevant and use real science in the classroom, just as a way to get the ball rolling for class. And so this would be a typical way I might start class. Maybe not every day, but every once a week or something similar to that.
And your students have computers at their desk?
They do not have computers at the desk. The school has we have access to computer labs in the school, but we don't have in the classroom. But what I would be doing is projecting this onto a screen, and it's it's a smart board, so it's interactive. So I'm not tied to my actual computer. I'm able to float around the room and then walk up to the screen, and we could actually draw on the movie while it's playing and actually save those images. So this is a Moodle site. It's basically a website hosted by our district, and this is what I use to start my class. I put my class schedule. Initially, I used it to start as a way to have class content, worksheets, PDFs, and I began to use some of the higher level functions, which has really been able to engage the learners in my classroom. So for example, you have what are called RSS feeds, and this is an image from NASA that beams to my website every day. I don't have to actually go look for it, and some days it's unbelievably related. We are actually talking about trenches. It's a little dark, but what you see is a volcano sticking out of the ocean, and we can actually relate this class content that we're talking about in class. We could highlight some of the main words like surface volcanoes, magma, tectonic plates, subduction, Pacific plates, Philippine plates, Mariana Trench, deepest place on Earth, volcanoes, stratovolcanoes. Those are all things that we're talking about in class, and I'm able to deliver those to the screen without looking for them. And again, relate real scientific information from NASA to my class. And of course we're not learning because the kids think they're distracting me by going to these places. What I'll do every day is I'll start the day with our homework. Today or tomorrow in class, this is what we'll be doing. I'll start the class, all the students will be able to see. We're going to introduce an iMovie project. We're going to take some different notes and watch an iMovie, and then their homework is to watch an iMovie. What I'm able to do with the website is I can upload worksheets. For instance, these are the class notes that we took as a class, and we used the smart board. And I'm able to actually take a screenshot of it, put it on the website for kids to download, and not only do they get to see typewritten information, they can see the information that we took in class, so it's relevant. It's in the same color that we took it. Or there's pictures that we actually searched for and were able to, I think it's more relevant for the students to be able to possibly get notes and see them as the way we took them rather than just be typewritten. Try to make my place website a place for differentiation with students. It's tough with class sizes to reach all the kids and to especially provide content for the high level kids who want more, but maybe because of circumstances you can't always get to that. But what I can do is post the information on the website. And what's great about this website is I can actually track student knowledge or student access. And I can see, for instance, that I tell the students that all the extra credit is on the website, and I don't have to talk about extra credit in class, and they can go there and actually get it. But what is very interesting is I can track their logs, and I can see that so-and-so on Friday night at 11:30 was actually on my website downloading an extra credit assignment. Or so-and-so was on at Saturday morning at 8 a.m. And those are two times when students have no business being on my class website. And so that I know to a degree that it's actually somewhat of an effective tool to reaching students, because students are going there on their own. And I think that's because of it just shows that they're engaged in the learning. I can post a calendar that shows what's coming up. We have an iMovie project. We can look at the current weather map. We can look at the current weather forecast. We can even see where there's earthquakes. And again, we might just take a break during transition in class to stop and have the students look at where earthquakes are. And we can talk about, well, in California there really aren't as many earthquakes as people talk about. But wow, look at Japan. You know, and if there was an earthquake in Japan, that energy wave would reach our classroom in 11 minutes. And we would actually be able to record that on a seismograph that I have working in the back of the room. So it's just a really great way to have, if you have internet and you have technology in your classroom, you can constantly refer to it, even just for a quick 2-minute teachable moment during a transition.
The earthquake happens in Japan and your classroom in West Hopkins, you could reach it in that short amount of time, or the earthquake would?
Yeah, I'm pointing at with my mouse here, Cox. This is a seismograph reading, and what you could see is there was a big 9.0 or 9.1 in Japan. And I walked in my classroom in the morning, and my seismograph was just going up and down. And what's great is the kids will jump next to it all day, and they'll try to get it to do is to make these big waves, because it's just movement in the Earth's crust, right, or feet stomping next to the glass. And when that earthquake hit, the kids couldn't replicate the energy waves that were going through the Earth, and that came from Japan, and they were right next to it. And so it's a great opportunity to just go to this website quick. It just takes a second. These are live feeds, and to see where the earthquakes are related to the seismograph in the room, and that's our current unit. So just some more examples of engaging students with technology. I'll just touch on one other thing about how I use it to engage learners, and how, like I said, I know that the evidence is there that they visit my site, so that I know that, providing that visual, I'm a very visual person, so especially with the earth sciences, it's tough to go on a field trip to the volcano So what you have to do is give them as many images and information as possible about it so that you can actually get that information. So I think technology is the way to deliver that. I mean, the teacher needs to have a computer to be able to find those images, and then the room has to be capable of projecting those images, and so that you using it becomes a part of your classroom. What I've started to do is I'll make little snippets in little mini movies in iMovie, which is a program for on a Mac. And what you're able to do is upload those to YouTube, which is you may have heard of. And the kids are all about it. So what's great is if they can actually use something that is in the popular culture as part of class. So Mount St. Helens, the kids have no idea what it is. I have vague recollections of seeing it on TV. But what I can do, very similar to what I did at the beginning of the presentation by walking step by step and asking kids to show, ask questions, is how many of you know that the Mount St. Helens eruption actually started with an earthquake? So you can make those types of connections. You can actually see the whole mountain sliding away. And this is all before the eruption. I apologize, I can't get it bigger. I wish I could. So the mountain is a massive landslide, and then you start to get the explosion. Kids have never seen this, ever. So to put it on YouTube, and then have them watch it from there, they think it's the coolest thing on Earth. And it's science, right? So I'm getting my point across. So you can get a video of just about anything, and it relates. In the coming next week, we're going to be working in the computer lab for the whole week, and I'm going to be teaching kids how to make an iMovie. And it's a program that's relatively easy to use. And so what I did is I created an example, and their homework is to watch it, so I don't have to show a 6-minute video in class. I can just have them go to my website and watch it through YouTube, because that's cool, right? If I showed it to them, normally they might not be engaged, but the fact that it's coming to them in a method that they're familiar with, that is something of interest. And so what I did is I just put together a quick movie with a lot of rich in images that talked about some various stuff related to plate tectonics and volcanoes, and then they can actually watch it. This is actually an underwater volcano. Most of the Earth's surface is covered with water. Most of the volcanoes on the planet are covered with water. And this is just a glimpse of them to watch this happening. And it's an engagement piece. And I can just reinforce key concepts. All right, enough with the fluff, right? What I want to do is also talk about how the technology has helped me as a teacher in the classroom. What I can actually do is provide mini quizzes or exams to students during the course of the curriculum with the technology. The website has the capability to show, to use a quiz function. And so because the students have to enroll in my course, I can actually track, I can give them like a 5-question formative assessment during the middle of a unit, and actually see if they understand it without waiting until the actual end of the unit. So, for example, this exam was one I had the students do ahead of time. It was a homework assignment. I didn't grade them on whether they knew the right answers. I just graded them on whether they took it. What I can also do is go analyze the summary statistics and find out who was getting it right, who was getting it wrong, what questions were good, what questions were bad, and I can really use that as feedback to guide my own teaching. So technology is an important piece for student engagement and help them get more involved in the learning. and to see more relevance, but it's also a way for teachers to help guide their practice. So you were flying over the ocean in an airplane. Well, looking out of the window, you see a chain of islands, and one of them is belching out smoke and ash. "Holy smokes," you exclaim. "There must be a blank down there somewhere. Can I have some more peanuts?" So then what we did is you can see it's not the typical test question, but it's a way to hopefully have the students, you know, it's not a big, scary test. It's something that we're just checking for their understanding along the way that can help guide my teaching and what we need to cover. Then we can choose the right answer. We can submit those answers. They can take it in several different points in time. And then we can get summary statistics and see how they're doing. It's a way for me also to see how the students are doing who usually wouldn't speak up. Some kids are really good at blending in, and if you can force them to answer a question on your own, you're able to evaluate how they're doing as an individual in a class of maybe people who are more eager than they are to speak. And so you can really address that. You can also use images and import images that you use in class rather than just focusing on text. And if you really want to hear students talk about it, they'll really say some amazing things. They'll be like, "I really like the pictures. I'm a real visual learner, and I was able to understand the content better because there was pictures." And so that's interesting. Another thing they say is even if sometimes the scores are lower, they say it's easier because it's easier to click through an answer and then move on. So that's an interesting side note. So that is just some examples of how I use technology in the classroom. Because you have weather, I should probably just show you a few things related to it generally. This is a steel drum. We can ask the students to make predictions. We have a 55-gallon drum that's sealed, and there's water inside slowly boiling, and what they're going to do is put the cap on the drum. And then they're going to pour ice and spray it down with cold water. And what do you think is going to happen? Now, basically, relates to gases, volume. And that's a big, grandiose example. We can't get a 55-gallon drum for every class. But they're sure more likely to watch it than if you just did a Sprite can, which is the same principle. And we could do this in the lab. That's easy. We don't want the computer to replace hands-on learning in a science lab. But if someone's gone, you can say, "Hey, there's this great lab we did. Can you stay after school?" "No." "Okay, well then why don't we have you watch this lab? It'll take you 30 seconds, and then you'll be able to complete it just like everyone else." Those are a couple things that I wanted to emphasize. Well, one is the student engagement piece, how to have them be more active and participating in the class, and then also how it helps me as a teacher to, shift my curriculum or make adaptations on the fly. If I get instant feedback that says they're reversing density and temperature, I can take a 5-minute and do a course correction. And we can actually analyze the classes as a result and see the results without names, anonymously, and the kids can actually see where they're at. And they actually get really positive feedback about evaluating an exam as a group. And you can really let them guide the process. It's really been interesting using these tools to help improve my teaching. So if anyone has any questions,
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Murphy. Mr. Friesen, how much time do you spend preparing all of this?
Chair, Speaker, I would say that I spend most of my time in school doing things not related to my curriculum, and I would suspect that most of my planning for the actual content of my teaching happens outside of the school day. Obviously, some of this stuff can carry over year to year. I didn't have to upload the steel drum collapsing. I just opened it up, and that there's some upfront time, but for the most part, you can really focus on doing slight changes once the bulk is there. I'm trying to develop a test bank for every unit. For instance, for makeup exams, if I'm having a hard time getting the student come in to do the exam, I can give them the Moodle version, which is my website version.
Thank you. Mr. Friesen, do you feel compelled, though, to change the information so that you can use it year after year, because kids might know, oh, I can go there and they haven't taken the course yet, or, you know, is there any of that that you have to be concerned about?
I would say that if I had kids surfing my site in summertime before class, I'd actually use that to my advantage. But if, for instance, they have to log in, so if they're not an actual participant in my class, they are not. None of you would be able to take my test, for instance, unless I allowed you to.
And how long, Madam Chair? Mr. Friesen, how long have you used this in your classroom?
I've been using this for about a year and a half.
Thank you.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Friesen, I just have two quick questions. One, you know, one of my kids is in high school, Tartan High School. They have kind of parent portal where you can go in and check on what your kids are doing, and then some of the teachers might have something, but like what their lesson plan for the day is, but nothing as advanced as this. Do you have any sense of how many teachers in Minnesota are using this or have access to this kind of technology? And my second part of my question is, can the students post on there? Can they post their assignments or papers, or do you have an interactive type quality?
Mr. Friesen.
Chair, member, I think that around the state I couldn't answer. Our school district, we have several. It's a free service. It's an open source thing that if the school district is interested, they can sign up. In the left-hand column of the screen, there is you can see all of the websites from, for instance, from my school, just at my junior high. So a lot of teachers are using it. Some of them aren't advanced, and some of them it's more of a glorified calendar. But what I've found is the more I've used it, the more it's become an important tool in my teaching. The second question was.
Can the students post? Like,
yes.
At the university, they say there's a paper due. Everybody just posts their papers.
Exactly. I have an upload. I can have all the students submit uploads. So all the extra credit for my class I accept only through uploading. And then I can actually type a reply to them, and we can have a back-and-forth dialogue about things. And we'll very often I'll have, for instance, if we go to the computer lab, I'll have a journal question at the end of the lab, so that when the students are done, they can immediately go to the journal question and start typing. And I can even dialogue back and forth with them in real time. We can even set up chat.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Friesen. You had mentioned, I don't remember exactly the context of your quote, but I wrote it down because it caught my attention. You said it's tough with class sizes to reach the kids. I'm kind of wondering if you could elaborate on that. What are you experiencing with class sizes? How is it difficult to reach the kids because of that from your perspective as a teacher?
Mr. Friesen.
Madam Chair and member, I would say I think a lot of your time gets taken up by relatively a few students. And obviously you have a pretty diverse spectrum of students in your classroom. You know, from like the challenge department, you're encouraged to, you know, provide challenge opportunities, and working with the special ed people, you realize that there's a lot of students who have needs that require more than, you know, 1 minute of your time to explain something. There's also modified assignments and things like that. But, you know, my class sizes aren't too much to complain about. I have about 28 to maybe 27 to 29. That I know that next year they're going up, but the fact is that there's just the classroom, a lot of it is taking care of daily business, catching up with students who are gone. And I like my website I like to use the technology because it provides an outlet for differentiation for students who want more. and I can post stuff that's relevant to the class, maybe if I can't get to their specific questions or needs.
Thank you.
Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for you. What do you do when students don't have access to the, you know, the internet or to your website and so on? And does that pose an advantage to other students that have access to everything that you have in front of you? What do you do in that case?
Mr. Friesen.
Madam Chair, member, I think that that is a significant problem. I know that we've had some programs in our school, a one-to-one, or I forget the name of the program right now, but it was a grant that gave low-income students computers, and all they had to pay was the modem cost, the internet access. I can't wait to get to the place where I can assume everyone has internet access. I don't actually give any assignments that have to be done using the internet if I don't give class time. I don't think we're there yet. And I know that some schools, you know, are ahead of others. I think that I'm in a district that has a lot of computers. The student computer ratio is quite high outside of school. And in school, you know, you can always use more computers. I think that that's a significant problem, and I think that there is a gap.
Representative Zimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Friesen, one question I have, and part of the question I had was answered by Representative... Here I am. Representative Erickson, you said you've been doing this for about a year, year and a half, or two maybe. Well, my question relates to the standards that we have in science. Have you modified or worked with the standards, and what has that meant as you develop your curriculum with what you have? It looks very interactive, very adjustable. You said it's adaptable. Do you spend time, or how does these standards affect your preparation curriculum?
Mr. Friesen.
Madam Chair, member, I think that the time that we have to cover a huge range of topics, for one thing, that's guided, that helps narrow our focus. You know, what are the standards? What's covered? What do we need to cover? I think right now we have a push at our school working at some of the higher level questioning and some of the more going above knowledge base and trying to get kids to think more so that applications can be put in place so that not only maybe they don't know that content or maybe it wasn't covered exactly the same way, but they'll be able to take that knowledge and apply it and adjust it. And so I think that that's one thing. I think... I mean, largely right now, I have a copy by my desk, and I look through them to see, you know, what aspects of this do I need to cover, and then that gives me the latitude to cover them any way I want. But I think that primarily right now, it's the outline, the overview of what to cover and to what degree.
Thank you, Mr. Friesen. You've given us a taste. And I have a feeling that your students keep clamoring for more and more. Appreciate it. Before you go, though, will you please tell us where you had your teacher preparation?
I was at the University of Minnesota. Science education.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Second item on the agenda today is we're going to have a test. Dr. Dirk Mattson is here from the Minnesota Department of Education. And I see Representative Erickson brought her number two pencil.
Yes, Madam Chair. I used to use this in the classroom for an attention-getting device when we were doing our writing, so I thought it would be most appropriate if we could focus on this oversized pencil for such a large assignment.
It's a goodie. Yes, please.
Pass it around.
That's great. Wonderful. Yeah.
Dr. Mattson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I just looked up. I'm sorry, I just got the joke. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to meet with you today. I've been asked to administer to you an assessment, and I will do my best to do so and give you a broad spectrum of what we do at the department in building tests. It's quite an honor to follow Mr. Friesen. As a former junior high teacher myself in Hibbing, his classroom was the one I'd walk down the way and kind of say, show me that thing again with the volcano. That was cool. And so that was quite a treat and an honor, quite frankly, to follow his presentation, and I thank you for that opportunity. I will say as a caveat, we are going to start this process requested by the chair. I will say as a caveat that I've also been requested to walk you through the directions, so I do that with no offense or demeaning opportunity, but it is a standardized assessment, and the chair is asked to administer as such. After we complete the assessment, you're going to have the opportunity to score that assessment. It's not commonly something we do with our tests, but we will give you the opportunity. And then I'd like to take you through maybe 15 minutes of how this test was constructed. Unless there are any questions, Madam Chair, I'll begin.
Please begin. And I would like to ask everyone in the room, even those of you that haven't completed your homework assignment from last week yet, to join us in taking the test. The test is yours. We will not reveal the scores. They will not be publicized. They will not be made public. If people know how well you did, it will be because you blabbed. Dr. Mattson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And just for members of the audience to know that there are additional copies, so if you are feeling quite shy at the moment, there are still copies available at the table down here. I will say as one additional disclaimer before I start, this test was built, it was mocked up. We did not have a test off the shelf that had the sample items requested. So we mocked this up. You may see some alignment issues with the cut and paste and so on. I want you to know that's not the quality of which we put out there, but I think it exercised some of my best skills on a Saturday morning at the table, at the breakfast table.
And you didn't have a whole lot of prep time.
Like Mr. Friesen, I do a lot at home, as he does and as I did as well. You're going to take a test. I'm going to take the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment Series 2. Other students may have a different version of this test, but all tests are the same length. I have distributed to you the test books and answer books. Do not mark on the answer books or break the seal on the test book until I tell you to do so.
My anxiety level.
If you have broken the seal, I may need to invalidate that test score. So again, please follow the directions as I read them to you. You have your answer book. You may have the name, and this is your answer book, your name, the district, school name, and number, grade, and date of birth located on the lower left side in the front page. It's on a sticker. We did not fill out anything but the members' names. So you have your name on a sticker. Please find this information now. Has everyone found this information?
Yes.
If there's no information about your pre-printed demographics on the lower left side of your answer book, then this information has been handwritten for you on the front page. If any of this information is correct, please raise your hand and I'll give you instructions for making corrections. Very good. And again, you need to exercise care as I step out of my role to take these directions as you wish. I recognize you have a very full desk, but please clear your desk of all materials except the pencils and erasers, and I leave that to members' discretion. You must use only a number 2 pencil. Is there anyone who does not have a number 2 pencil and an eraser?
Oh, never mind. I'm good.
Mechanical pencils and pens cannot be used. You may use the blank area of your answer book to take notes. We've scheduled a whopping 15 minutes for this test today, but you will be given as much time as you need to complete the test. We will do segments 1, 2, and 3 today. If you have an emergency, raise your hand and I will come to you. Only one student at a time will be allowed to leave the room. We will take a break approximately. Actually, we're going to make the lug through the 15 minutes. Are there any questions? You may not have books, pens, scratch paper, cellular phones, headphones, unless required by your accommodation, dictionaries, thesauruses, or other reference materials at your desk during this test. If you have brought any such materials, please place them under your desk. You may pick them up after the test. Are there any questions? We're almost there. When you're marking your answers for multiple choice questions, fill in only one circle of the answer book for each question. Make heavy marks that fill the entire circle. If you change your answer, be sure to erase the first answer completely. For some questions, you will have to write your answers on the lines or the space provided in your answer book. Write your answers clearly and keep your answers inside within the box provided. I cannot answer questions about the test items themselves, but if you have other questions about the test once you begin, or if something is wrong with your test or answer book, please raise your hand and I will help you. Try to answer all the questions. There is no penalty for guessing. On your test book, please print your name on the top of your test book. There's a space for your name at the top of this book. Your answer book has a section labeled form number located in the middle left side of your answer book. So I'm picking up the pace here and I'll slow down for a minute. Again, I'll repeat that. Your answer book has a sable labeled reading form or math form, we're going to use the same one in this case, located on the middle left side of your answer book. Please find that section now. Fill in the circle to indicate the number of the test form you are using. This is found on the front cover of your test book, and this is the only question I'll help you with. Your test form is number 12. So you have that on the front cover of your test booklet. Please bubble in the number 12, where it says either reading or math form. Again, you won't be turning these in. Representatives, now we are going to break the seal on the test. Break the seal by sliding your pencil between the pages and pushing upwards like so. Open the test book to page 3. Find the reading test general directions to the students at the top of the page. Follow along as I read the directions to you. Now, I'll step out just for a moment here to say that I'm going to give you three segments of a test. The first, a regular MCA2 has four segments to it. But we've divided this up to give you a reading 5th grade segment of 5 questions, a science 8th grade segment of 5 questions, and an 11th grade math segment of 5 questions. So these directions will reflect the reading test as to get you started. There are 4 segments to the reading test. It says at the top, your teacher will tell you when to begin each segment. Read each passage or poem, read the questions about what you've read. Mark your answers on the questions in your answer book. As you read each passage or poem, you may take notes and highlight in your test book. The test has 2 kinds of questions, multiple choice and open-ended. Answer the multiple choice questions by filling in a circle in an answer book that matches the answer you think is best. The circle must be completely filled in for your answer to be scored. The sample question below shows how to do this. Since the word recycling means the same as the word we're using, C is the correct answer. You fill in the answer, the circle C in your answer book. Answer each open-ended question by writing your answer in the lines provided in your answer book. Be sure to write your answers clearly. When you finish the segment of your test, stop and check your answers. This is very important, please. When you finish a segment of a test, stop and check your answers. Then use the sticker your teacher gives you to seal it. Once you seal a segment, and I'll pass these out to members, once you seal a segment, you cannot go back to it. Each segment must be sealed before you move on to the next segment. So what's going to happen here, members, is that you're going to complete the 5 questions for reading. You're going to seal that segment. I'm also going to show you our new, and it's appropriate that follow Mr. Friesen, because I will show you an interactive science test that we are developing for 8th grade. And so this will be somewhat simulated, but a little bit jolted, most likely because of your test administrator. So I'll let you begin. We will now take segment 1. Be sure to check your answers when you finish the segment on the test. Raise your hand when you're ready for the next segment. I'll give you a sticker to seal those, and if I may, I'll hand those stickers out totally and completely. So this is segment 1, reading. You may begin.
Happy, Jim.
again as a reminder, chair members, when you complete number 5 and are sure of your work, please seal the test booklet where the stickers indicate.
Pressure on it. This is why it validates the test.
I can't contemplate with all this noise.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Matson.
Thank you. Just members, we're allocating approximately 5 minutes per section. I know that's going to be kind of pushing it. I will tell you that grammar or correct punctuation in the reading portion, we're looking for the content, so we'll ask you to put some bullets down there and we'll be ready to move on.
Can you follow directions? Rodney, can you follow directions?
I had a hall pass.
Sleep.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Matson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So what I've done is I've completed segment one, and I've put my seal on segment one so that I can't go back. And this is done actually for security purposes because the test can be given over several days. And so the portion is that you're done with this section, you can't go back 3 days later after watching Jeopardy or what have you and figure out the right answer. What we're going to do next is we're going to turn to segment two, if I may. Segment two is a science test. Truly is a prototype. Our more refined samplers are going to be coming out just in the next couple of weeks. This test is scheduled to go online in the spring of 2008. It's interesting that members had questions of Mr. Pries and my colleague, the last presenter, about technology because this test was built from the ground up to be using technology. So it is an issue where we are not sending out test books anymore. We are sending electronically test little packages, and students will complete those packages. There are additional security concerns when doing tests on computer. I've listed the software and hardware requirements that are for this science test. It is a challenge. It is required of No Child Left Behind. It's in grades 5, 8, and high school, and that's the requirements of that legislation. The idea to build this test on a computer did not come from the department. It actually came from science teachers. There are a couple of different ways to build the science test. One is to make it basically a paper and pencil test, and you could see all the things that you might be missing in the inquiry of science, as was presented by Mr. Friesen. The other option is to build, send out little kits of the powder and the washers and the magnets and so on. And you can imagine distribution of that across a standardized test of 65,000 per grade, 65,000 students per grade. So here's where we are is with computer. And I'll talk more about this in my concluding remarks in a bit. So what I'd like you to do next, then, is to, as we move on with the test, what I've done is I'm going to give you, and again, I'm hesitant to show you the demonstration here because it is one of the initial prototypes that we have, but it's because of the spendiness of items, I don't have any other items to give you at this time, but in the next couple weeks or so, we'll have another version out. So I've given you the paper forms. And I've given you paper screenshots, if you will. So this is your test book, but you're still going to answer in your answer book, ladies and gentlemen. And this is essentially the test, and I'm hoping my volume is up with the switch that we've done. So we're going to take an 8th grade sample test, 5 questions on weather. This should either be very loud.
On the way to school, students saw fog in low-lying areas. Students also noticed that the air was very calm and there was little wind.
The question there, then, is you'll answer that question in your answer book for the purposes here. Students would typically respond, and I'll just pick A, whether A is the correct answer or not, but I'm going to move through the test. So you've got and again, if you need to go back to these, you have the actual screenshot. And I could, as a student, go back to these. One of the other interesting features that we have with this test, and it's a summative test, but if I know that, you know, B wasn't the correct answer, I can cross that answer out. And I know D is not the correct answer, I'm going to cross that answer out. So there are a bundle of features up above that allow me to navigate through this test. So that was question number one. And again, I'm not claiming that A is the correct answer, only for demonstration purposes. Here's question
later
two.
That morning, students saw the flag glowing in the window. Click the next button to go on.
So that's the scenario that's being presented. Here comes question number two. And again, there won't be any audio here because it's a repeat of that question. Because this is a very artificial setting, you're on page 15 now of your test booklet. And your answer book, you're on page 3.
The energy that drives our weather is transferred through several processes. Click the next button to go on.
So there again, this is a prototype of what was created, but here is...
The energy that drives our weather is transferred through several processes. Click the next button to go on.
So here's the question that goes with that particular scenario. Now, this is a different type of item than you can ask on a paper and pencil test. Essentially, what you're being asked on page 17 or on this screen is to put an X on the click on the diagram to put a plus sign on the energy source that drives our weather. If I think it's the American flag, I could put it. If I don't believe it's the American flag, I could put it on the cloud, and it should replace it. So we'll move on. And again, your answer book is where you're keeping track of your scores. And here's question number 4. I may have jumped ahead. I'm sorry if I said page 17. My apologies. That was page 16. Here's question number 4 on page 17.
Energy is transferred through several processes. This diagram illustrates the various processes of energy transport that affect the Earth and its atmosphere.
The purpose of this type of item is what we call a figural response, where the students will click and grab the word and put it in the correct spot, and they can pull it back out, etc. So part of your task will be to fill in that you're going to have to hand write again for our purposes here. You can see that this is a little bit different than an A, B, C, D item because there are many different options. If I think that's condensation coming from the sun and convection here, etc., I can continue to push and pull until I have it correct or I feel it's correct. So what you're answering now is page 3 of your answer book, number 4. You can just write those answers right in there. going to go to the next final science question here. Again, this would be the student has answered, now they're quick to go next to go
and
on.
Weather balloons carry instruments that collect data as they rise through the troposphere into the stratosphere. Radios relay the data back to meteorologists.
So the question, this is what we called, similar to what you did with the cat poem in segment, question number 5 in the reading segment, this is a constructed response where you would, the students are actually going to type in their answer, describe a change that this weather balloon would record, and that goes in the space to the left, and then they'll type in an answer here of what caused the change you described. I'll give you a few moments if you'd like to go back on any of those items to review it, and once you feel you're confident of your answers, you can seal segment 2 from page 11 to 20. Give you just another few moments to complete that science section, and then we'll move on to the math. Madam Chair, members, I'd like to take you to the third section, if I may.
You may.
Thank you.
I didn't like this section.
I'll be interested in the Chair's opinions after the third section. We're now going to take the math test. I'm not going to reread to you, members, the directions here, but I do want to point out on page 21 of your test booklet, there are some unique items. Two of the items you've seen before, but there's a third item I want to draw your attention to, please. So in the interest of time, I won't read through all these. There is, as you read through these directions, you can use scratch paper. The scratch paper can be used as your test book, but we don't allow scratch paper on the actual test. You can't bring in your own test scratch paper because, for obvious reasons, you might have formula or you might bring it to period 2's class, etc. So, again, there are some very standardized settings. You can use any part of the test book as a scratch paper. Answer or item number 1 there is a multiple choice, and we're all familiar with those as you've already taken those items on this exam. And number 2 there on page 21 is an open-ended question, or what we call in the business constructed response. And that's where you explain your answer. You'll have one of those types as we move into this section as well. The third one that we use on the MCA 2s, which didn't exist on the MCAs in old days, is called a graded response. Teachers love these items. Students aren't so enamored with them because you have to actually come up with the response and bubble it in. So therefore, if I say, you know, how much is 2 dozen, and that's not an item we'd use because we don't require kids to know the dozen, I don't believe. I'd have to check the standards. You would have to know that it's 24.
and you would have to bubble in 2, 4. You don't get to process of elimination there. So you can see the answer here is -8, and the students have to bubble in -8. There is no answer provided for them. So just some final directions on this segment, and then we'll get to the fun part of scoring. You may use a calculator for all segments. The grade 11 math test is calculator neutral. That is, the items are not designed to be at advantage with or without a calculator, so you may use them. There's no standards do not require non-calculator items. And then as we've done in the past, you'll finish this segment and apply the seal essentially from page 23 to 28. I'll also point out to members, there is a grade 11 formula sheet. This is standard with the documentation that the student receives. They typically rip that out, so you're free to use that formula if that helps you. Instead of 5 minutes for this section, we've extended it to 7.
Less
sorry, you may begin segment 3. Madam Chair, members. Thank you. And only in the interest of time am I going to ask you to try and make a final attempt on items. I recognize you may not be done. I also want to emphasize these tests are not timed, but your life is, so I need to move on to some other things.
Thanks for saving us.
Once you've sealed the booklet, I'll be glad to give out the answer key. You're going to score your own items. Members, you're getting the answer key now. I will point out that you can go back through your own test to correct the answer for each item except for the last item in all subjects or segments. And a couple in science, number 5 should be the one that's maybe going to take a little more work to solve. That is constructive response. So you have the correct answers there in reading, segment 1, science, segment 2, and mathematics, segment 3. You'll see also, and I'll just, in the interest of time, if I may, I'll continue on as you score and look at your response. We provided you the rubric, which is what the score might look like for your reading score about the cats. On page 3 of the answer key is a rubric for how this is scored. Mm-hmm. And on page 4 is a sample answer from a real student who took this test and what they wrote for a score point of 4. And it continues on in science, number 5. There's the sample answers there. The vivid response, one of the unique features about that that's listed on page 6 is you can basically score that in a number of different ways, and all of those score points are acceptable. I could score it as 3. I could write 3/8, 0.375, 0.375. Start on the left, start on the right. There are various options to do that. And then the kind of the king of the assessment there was number 7. You can see the rubric there. And then a sample student answer on the back of the document. So if you're interested, in the interest of time, you may just want to score your multiple choice or single word items now. And I'll tell you a little bit more about those rubrics in just a moment. As you know, we're always interested in getting results back immediately, so anything you can do to speed up the process would be most appreciated.
I like the reading of that. But that was just fourth grade, right?
Madam Chair, that was fifth grade. Yes.
Did anyone in the audience get 100?
I couldn't figure mine out. I forgot that you could do negative numbers along the graph.
Madam Chair?
Dr. Matson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, in the interest of time, I'd like to take you through a very brief tour of how this test gets built, not this exact one. But here's the other secret. All of these test questions were out on our website, so if you would have been studying for it, you would have been able to. These are all released items that are available to students. I'm going to take you very briefly, and I promise to be very brief, as I know the time is of the essence, in showing you how we actually build these tests. and what some of the constraints are, what some of the challenges are. So, again, I'll walk you through this. I'll be glad to stay after this hearing if you have questions specific to any particular item or need help with the scores. We are focused, as is all of the Department of Education, on student learning. We do just one part of it, which is, and this handout should have been presented to you at your table as well.
We have it in our packet.
Very good. Thank you. On the far left side is summative testing. That's our job. We support, as best we can, formative assessment. We support all of those other elements of the wheel here, but our job is just one of those circles, summative testing. I will tell you that I work with a fine staff of 25 individuals who help build these tests. They are custom built, and I'll show you about how rare or how unique that is. But these are the mission, values, and purpose that we work off of to do the best thing for kids. And essentially, that is our mantra, is do the right thing for kids. I'm going to take you very briefly on how we build these tests in Minnesota, which is not unusual to those of other states. How these tests are scored, you had an opportunity. This is kind of a unique opportunity. Rarely, in fact, I guess I could say never, do we let students score their own tests. How performance levels are set, those are passing scores. I had a request about how the graduation test will work and then what the vision for Minnesota testing can look like. So the criterion-based test. What's happening in other states? We are not unique in how we build tests to satisfy both state and federal requirements. We're one of 40 states that builds their own custom-built standardized criterion reference test, and what that means is here's the bar. Criterion reference means we're going to set the bar and we're going to expect everyone to jump that particular bar. It's not that we'll keep ratcheting up the bar, we set the bar one time. It's a criterion that we expect all students to succeed on. Some states do use norm reference, and if I had time, I'd go into what some of the challenges would be about doing that, for particularly fulfilling legislation like NCLB. There's a couple other states that use NRTs, norm reference tests, combination of those, and so on. So my point in this slide is to say we are not unique in Minnesota or doing something that's not being done elsewhere. Most states, because they want these tests to align to their standards, make sure that they build these customized tests. Here is a page of our test specifications. We essentially take the standards to which Representative Denver was asking about earlier, and the questions are made directly in line to those standards. We do double checks, triple checks. We have independent audits to make sure the questions are truly aligned to those standards. What can happen if you buy a shelf test, as we call it, is they may have questions on there that aren't even in the Minnesota standards, and that's when you wind up teaching to the test, because the teachers aren't teaching what's in their curriculum, they're teaching a test item. So these are relatively complicated documents. They're designed to be for the item writers, the folks who write the test questions. And when we go through, this is an example of the entire document for math and this is for science, here's math and reading. I'll talk about how teachers checked to make sure. Minnesota teachers, before students even take the test, check to make sure the questions lined up to the standards that have been passed by this legislature. This is how we build our test. This is what we call industry standard. It's not, again, unique to Minnesota. This is a two-year process. When the standards are revised, as they were in 2003 for math and reading and are now currently under revision and for mathematics again, we have to write new test specifications, say exactly what's going to be on the test. The green boxes that are on the screen demonstrate places where Minnesota teachers come in to review test questions. All along this two-year process, they review test questions and say, does this line up with the test? Did this question do what we expected it to do? Was there something tricky about this question that shouldn't have happened and we need to get rid of it? So those teachers will check. We have over 2,000 teachers like Mr. Friesen in our database, and they come and help us with these tests. We give the test, and then finally, that last blue box, we have to set achievement levels. And that's the thing that took so long this past summer, is it's a standardized process, again, that happens every time you give a new test. You have to set basically the question of how much is good enough, that criterion I asked about, where do you want to set the bar? And most times in the classroom, and in a formative assessment, you might say 90 is an A, and 80 is a B, and 70 is a C. That's not how it's done in large-scale testing, because we need to make absolutely sure that we have the data that we want and that we have the expectations we want for the students we're testing, and I'll talk more about that in just a second. I want to tell you a little bit about how tests are scored. We have quality control procedures throughout our tests. We use controls throughout to make sure the tests are matching the standards. There are some psychometric or measurement theory practices that have to happen. We do it. We have our testing contractor do it, and we have a third-party independent testing just the research company, make sure that the test is exactly correct, and it's like a checks and balances. If any one of those three find that it's inaccurate as far as how the measurement formulas work out, then we start over and we look at it again, and we say, we got to go back, we've got to check something. So we do those throughout. We send through sample tests. But so your answer book, we may create that at the department, and we'll send it in and expect it to be scored. And we know what we want for that score. We double-check the scores were calculated correctly. We also get reports before anybody else as far as kind of sample reports. They're not ready for publication. We check the data. We do our own calculations and say, yep, that's what that school should get based on the data. The other, there are two principal reasons why the testing, why the scoring in Minnesota can take some time. This summer, it will not take as long as it did in 2006, but one of them is quality controls. It is very important that we make sure, I have told people, I can get you the MCA scores immediately. I can get them to you in 24 hours if you'd like them. So I make that claim here. If you would like them accurate, and you would like students to get credit for everything they did on the test, then I need a little more time. But I can get them to you quickly, it's just they won't be accurate, nor will students get credit. So it's not a, it isn't an either-or kind of situation. Constructive responses are required by statute in Minnesota. Those kinds of questions where students explain their reasoning, and you took this particular question on your exam, you can see that no machine can score that question. It needs to go to humans. And we need to do many statistical checks to make sure the humans are scoring it correctly. Minnesota teachers check and help us to find these rubrics and make sure that they're being scored appropriately. Minnesota teachers say, this is how what you get a 4 on student responses. They look at actual student responses, and they say, this is what you get a 4 point, this is what you get a 3 point, according to the rubric that I've included in your answer key. Once that's done, they send it off to the, we have it scored, and they do all kinds of statistical checks, as I mentioned. We have scores to check them, human scores, but if you are very excited that your grandchild is born today, you may be giving out more 4s than you should. And if you're very sad that your car was repossessed, you may be giving out more 0s than you should. We check those statistically, and we make sure they're appropriate and within line of the rubric. We feed in pre-scored papers to make sure that we expect that got a 3 the last time it was scored, it should get a 3 by you as well. If you're having troubles, and this is done with in cooperation with our testing partner, they either retrain you or release you, and they drop all those scores and they feed them back into the system. So there are many checks. They're read behind, and the scores should match up. I mentioned standard setting. When we go to a new math test in 2011, if we need to go to the MCA 3s because of the revision of the standards, we'll need a little more time again. We can be faster if we eliminate constructed response, but you can see that the response that those questions we're asking is more than A, B, C, or D. I'll tell you about how performance levels are set. This is what took the time this summer. We don't set 90, 80, 70, 60, and the reason for that is we can create a test that's maybe a little bit harder next year and a little bit easier the following year. It's not on purpose. It just happens. That's the way the test builds. So to make it exactly equal from one year to the next, we need to go through this some of the psychometric principles that go on in the place. Here's how standard setting worked this year. Teachers came in June and looked at the data of how students performed. This is the test booklet of the actual test items, ordered from the items that the students did were the easiest for students, just about all of them got them correct, to those that were the hardest. And teachers, and I'm making this very simple, but they basically placed the bookmark and said, that's how much I think you need to do to be able to say you're proficient, that much of the test. And then they went back and said, what's exceeds this year? Well, they said, okay, what's left? I think that much is exceeds. And they picked another bookmark. And they did that 3 times. And this was the process. And I'm making it very simple. It took 4 days to do, and it's a standardized process. The reason we do that is we check to see how students perform. Expectations are tempered with what the data tells us. We had these groups participating in that standard setting activity. You see the various groups that were represented there. And then finally, we talked about at standard setting, what is the expectation of students are instructed in all of the standards? What expectation do we have? And that's what we got for scores. The Department of Education did not set the performance on these tests. Minnesota teachers said, this is how much is good enough. This is the bar we're going to set. The commissioner then approved those standards, but it was Minnesota teachers who picked the items, who told us how they were going to be scored, and then said, this is how much is good enough. This is how much of the test you got to do to get right. So when people ask me about the math test and 30% correct in 11th grade, Minnesota teachers picked that score. Here's how the graduation test will work if legislation is allowed to move through. We have a little bit of cleanup on that test. Technically, you may know that the basic skills test for the BST is being phased out, and now the MCA2s are there in high school. We were able to, by doing this, we were able to eliminate a couple of tests, the BST in reading and math. I'm going to show you how students are going to move through this test. This year's ninth graders are going to take a writing test. This year's 10th graders are going to take a reading test, 11th graders the math test, and then retest if necessary as they move through. Very briefly, and this gets a little complex, but I'll try and show you. Essentially, when students take the math or reading, they're going to get two chances in this test. The first half will fulfill Uncle Sam's requirements for No Child Left Behind, and we ask about 50 test questions for that. We're going to build in another test inside a test. We're going to do a two-for-one sale here. We're going to ask another 40 questions. 15 of those questions actually are working only for the state's requirement, but we borrow 25 questions to have a 40-question test for that piece. So students get scored once for NCLB, once for grad, if needed, and then we have to build more tests, and we need more test items, so they have another group of items that aren't scored. When they retest, if they weren't successful in either of the two options on the top row, they only retest on computer on the last portion there. There are three routes that we expect for proficiency. Again, you'll see this in bills presented to the legislature, and we believe this is an appropriate and fair manner for students to be scored. Either they're proficient on the MCA2, they're proficient on that little 40-question segment, or they may be IEP or 504 students. The retests will be computer-based. They'll be available every 6 weeks on demand. There will be no longer a testing window. When I'm ready to take the test, I take it. But there will be a forced remediation that requires them to, it locks them out for 6 weeks. So you can't just come back tomorrow and start clicking away and see if you're better tomorrow. Taking the test over and over again does not improve your performance. It's the remediation and the teaching that goes on between that. We know that. Then finally, right now, as I mentioned, we have all of these elements in there. We currently deal with only some of the testing on the MCA2s. I know the governor's budget, and I, as the director of testing, am excited to be able to hopefully have the opportunity to provide voluntary computer-based formative assessments for districts. They're asking us for this kind of information, and we're trying to respond in that way. And also, what do we do in between? If we find out they're not doing well, certainly that's the teacher's prerogative, but we want to provide an additional toolbox for them of looking at research-based instructional strategies. So that doesn't mean we're saying this is how to do it, but here's the toolbox of some ways that, if you're familiar with the work of Marzano, et cetera, that these have demonstrated some effect size and being able to help students. So we're hoping that we are able to add a couple of more circles to this wheel and providing some ease for districts. And with that, I'll close. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Manson.
And very quickly.
And the student that passes this assessment at every level then is ready for world competition?
I would not say necessarily the third grader that passes it is ready for world competition. I know that the 10th and 11th grade test is certainly of a much higher rigor than we've had before. I know that the revision of the math standards is they've been integrating, cooperating with, affiliating with higher ed institution of developing math standards that are even more rigorous than what I showed you on this particular test. I'm not an expert on world competition, but I would say it's going to put you in a ballpark.
And are these scores then published as school scores? Does the school get the grade rather than the student?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's exactly correct. This is a system-wide check. It's a school-level check. There is no accountability for the student in this. One of the enhancements we believe that's going to put a little more motivation in for the 10th and 11th graders is that it now becomes the graduation test. But you're exactly correct. Students that are savvy in 8th grade may say, they may have a different motivational aspect to that. We're hoping not, but I have very little to encourage them with, perhaps. But we find, typically, that motivation does not drop off until we get to the 10th and 11th grade test, members may know that 30% of the items, 30% of the responses were left blank for that constructed response, something like that in the math test at 11th grade, 30% of them. And we know that's because of the motivation factor.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Mattson. And any of you, he said that he would answer any questions that you might have afterwards. We've reached the conclusion to this committee meeting, but before we go, Representative Hornstein, have you read the minutes?
No, but I'll move them.
The minutes, Representative Hornstein moves adoption of the minutes of January 22nd as printed. Are there any corrections? If not, the minutes are adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and this meeting is adjourned.